This is TalkBack, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309.
This is News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. KGVO, Missoula's news and weather station.
Wow, finally somebody older than me. That's amazing. All right, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Thursday, April 2nd edition of TalkBack. TalkBack this morning is brought to you by Y-West Storage. Secure flexible self-storage in Missoula. To reserve your unit today, call Y-West. These are all 406 area code numbers. 510-0590 for our sponsors. Quality seamless gutters, expert gutter installation and repair. For a free quote, call 728-4002. Bruckner's Truck and Equipment. Heavy-duty truck sales, parts and service. Call 541-9097 for Bruckner's. Busy Bees Cleaning Service. Commercial cleaning you can always trust. For a free estimate, call Busy Bees, 550-3219. Pivots Plus, Montana's leader in irrigation parts service and sales. Call Pivots Plus, 683-4418. Gomer's Diesel, diesel repair parts and service in Missoula. Call Gomer's, 728-7620 today. And by Harrington Surgical Supply, providing medical and surgical supplies to healthcare professionals all across western Montana. Call Harrington, 721-8468.
The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thursday morning, April 2nd. Peter Christian here. Mr. Nick Christensen over there. Good morning, Mr. Nick.
Good morning.
And, well, we already have a caller waiting on the line for open phones for this first half hour. And the folks in the Montana World Affairs Council and the Southeast Asian Conference is also going to be continuing today. Bob will be with us starting at 8:30. Right now, it's open phones. So let's get Ed on the line. Ed, good morning, sir. You're on TalkBack. What's up?
Hey, good morning. Wasn't that a wonderful liftoff yesterday? I don't know if you had a chance to watch it live, but it was absolutely fantastic. We lived in northern Florida for a couple of years, and we went to the Cape to watch the liftoff of Apollo 14.
Cool.
That was 1971.
Wow.
We drove with friends. Friends were in their car. We couldn't get as close as the dignitaries, of course, but there was parking alongside the road. We had a picnic. Kids played. But the liftoff wasn't too impressive. Stretch your arm out.
Yeah.
Okay. And hold your thumb and index finger about 3/4 of an inch apart.
Right.
And that's as much as you could see of the flaming booster rockets until it went into this low cloud cover, and that masked some of the sound too, I think.
Kind of anticlimactic, huh?
It was, but in any event, the burns went into the cloud cover, and we left, but we bogged down and stopped it by an enormous traffic jam. I mean, big.
Wow.
It was stop and go, mostly stop, for 9 to 10 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Before we could even get to Interstate 95. Yeah, absolutely. They were legendary, these traffic jams, but we had ignored the problem. Yeah, it was 9-10 hours, and a lot of it was with the engine off, just sitting there.
I must ask you, did you have small children with you at the time?
About 4 years old.
Oh, right? Yeah. I'll bet, yeah, that was big fun trying to,
yeah,
figure out how to handle bathroom breaks and what you're going to do. I bet you had to be very resourceful.
Well, dinner time came, and there was a Long John Silver's right there. We got out of line to have dinner, and then we managed to get back in and sit there again. But that's my remembering of Apollo 14 liftoff.
Well, it was tasty anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, thanks for letting us know. Appreciate it, sir. Yeah. Hey, we're up against our first break. We have Joe and Harry waiting to visit. It's open phones for this first half hour, by the way. And then Bob Seidenschwartz will be back with us for the Montana World Affairs Council from 8:30 until 10. So right now, it's open phones. So we're going to get to your calls right after this.
Dennis Bragg with the updated weather. A mix of rain and snow in the forecast early Thursday, turning cloudy with rain through the afternoon. Highs will get up to about the mid-40s. Then on Thursday night, a mix of snow and rain again as well. Most of the accumulation is going to be above 5 or 6,000 feet, so those passes could be tricky driving. Then on Friday, a slight chance of rain and snow before noon. Mostly cloudy for Friday, although we could have some sun breaks. Sun continues into Easter weekend.
Welcome back. This is Talk Back for Thursday, April 2nd. Phone lines are lighting up for open phones for this first half hour. Joe is up next. Joe, good morning, sir. You're on Talk Back. What's on your mind, please?
Yeah, I caught a few of the sound clips from the Supreme Court yesterday concerning birthright citizenship, and a couple of things are interesting. John Roberts says that if you're an ambassador from a foreign country and you have children here, they cannot be a citizen. But he thinks it's a stretch to say that an illegal immigrant who has violated our laws can. And then Ketanji Jackson was pretty interesting. She's afraid that somebody might have to show an ID, which is a familiar conversation with voting rights. But, you know, if you're from a foreign country and you're here illegally and you want your child to be a citizen born here, you'd have to show an ID. And that really bothers her. But, you know, it's pretty interesting because we didn't even have immigration laws until after the 14th Amendment was passed. So it's just mind-boggling. But I do think that the Supreme Court will come to the right conclusion and say that if you're here illegally, that you cannot have, you know, birthright citizenship. So that's just my opinion.
Let's hope so. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And yeah. I believe Harry is next. Harry, good morning, sir. You are on TalkBack. It's open phone, sir. What's up?
Yeah, good morning, Peter. Yeah, a couple things. Just a flashback from earlier talk or open phones. They're talking about the Kings, you know, Kings protest.
And I don't think a single King showed up at the No Kings rally. So I think it was successful.
The thing is, do you want to stop, wait until there is a King before you say no? We don't want that. I mean, it's like anything else. It's easier to stop something before it happens. And the idea that Trump is, you know, okay, he's no King, and but he's acting more like King all the time. He tears down the White House without by your leave. Goes off to war with Iran without talking to anybody. He's doing all these ruling by executive order. I mean, that's like a royal mandate. He's just like, do this, and that's until they say he can't. So, I mean, is that's the way we want our country ruled? You know, we keep just do something and then wait until he say whether it's legal or not.
Well, let me ask you something. Have you? And I'm being very serious about this. Have you contacted your elected representatives? We have four of them here in Montana. Have you contacted them and say, hey, what are you doing about this? The president succeeding his authority. I mean, have you actually taken steps to try to address that?
On the show, I talked to Zinke about it. I asked him about how he's taking Congress, and he said, and he just hems and haws, and he admits that the Congress is giving up their power, but they don't do anything about it. But so, I say, people make fun of it, but I think there's been more people come out for this No Kings rally than there was for any Tea Party rally. So, I mean, apparently some people think there's something going on, something wrong.
Well,
the
Tea Party rallies were a whole different audience. They were mostly older adults, a conservative, and I think the No Kings are a much younger audience, and they're probably just more of them.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, but it shows that there's concern. There's people are concerned about this.
And that's great. They're taking advantage of our First Amendment rights.
Yeah, but people just making fun of it. But I think there's, they show me that people are concerned. But also, there's another thing. John Lott, I lied what I said. I didn't say that there was no problem with the election fraud. I just said that it's very minor. But the fact that he, five minutes after I said that, he said that I had misquoted me, shows that he's supposed to be an investigator, right? You know, or whatever. And he's supposed to be the professor. Well, if his political viewpoint overrides a fact, shows me that I can't trust pretty much anything he does. Somebody else had called in and said that I had said that there was no problem with fraud. But people to hear what they want to hear. But this guy is supposed to be professional at this. So I mean, the fact that he can't even, 5 minutes later misquotes me shows that he's so biased that he uses his biases overrides his the facts, and also that he did prove one point for me though that he said 2020 went back to 2020. Oh, look at what happened to 2020, and that I said that was the whole idea of this whole thing is that, that Trump is said he was cheated, and now they're trying to prove that he was cheated. So that you know, and John Lott, he's obviously part of the Trump cult, and so I mean that's fine, but it just that's a. A fact that he has his political views, but I take it all everything he says in with a big grain of salt.
Well, I will tell you this, and you can write this down if you want. When the next election comes around in 2028, President Trump will not run for re-election. He's not allowed to via the Constitution, and someone else will be president. And so,
right.
at that point, you can just relax.
Well, thing is, though, I mean. There's gonna be, how much damage can be done in two years here? He's already doing damage. He wants to get us out of NATO now. He's talked about getting out of NATO. I mean, doing all these things that is screwing up the whole world. And so, yeah, fine. But how much damage is done and how long is it going to take to fix all that damage afterwards?
I wonder if he's more concerned about the other members of NATO paying their fair share for the ammunitions and the things that they need to protect themselves. Again, I could be wrong about that, but I think President Trump makes that point.
Yeah, but the thing is they don't pay into a slush fund. They're there to protect themselves, and it's true they should have more money to protect themselves, but. It doesn't really affect us. I mean, unless we just want to say, okay, we're going to be our kingdom, kingdom of the United States and heck with the rest of the world. But our biggest strength is being with allies. It's always, a while back we had a thing about how empires fall apart. Well, the difference with our empire is that we are allies. We have a lot of allies. We have the whole pretty much everybody.
Yeah, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. That's NATO.
Yeah, right. And it's our allies. That's our strength. But Trump wants to just he keeps pushing away allies. He just wants to be United States by itself. And again, that's what I say. He's doing so much damage, and it's going to be years before if they can ever get it fixed. So.
Well, I think it's time for Harry to run for office. What do you think? Hey, that's okay. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. We're going to get right back with Dave and Jeff. We're just a few seconds before our break, so we're going to do that right now. And it's open phones for another 10 minutes, and then Bob Seidenschwartz will be joining us, and the Montana World Affairs Council will pick up where we left off yesterday. We'll be right back after this.
Hello, this is...
Hey, we're back on TalkBack, and the phone lines are just lighting up like crazy for open phones, so let's jump right back in. Dave, you're up first. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, last night Trump said that the Strait of Hormuz will take care of itself, that we don't have to worry that we have all the oil we need in our country. Now, first of all, that's not true. Montana gets between 75% and 90% of its oil coming in to be refined and turned into gasoline here. And the oil market didn't think it was true either because our gas and oil prices went up after his speech. And that's not the only problem. We get fertilizer through that Strait of Hormuz, and we get helium, which is already having problems for our industry. We cannot just say that, oh, we're isolated from the Strait of Hormuz, and that we can let Iran control it, because Iran, why would they send fertilizer to the United States? Why would they send helium to the United States? We're so focused on gasoline and oil coming through the strait that we're ignoring key elements that we need as a country. And it is ridiculous to think that we can isolate ourselves.
All right. Well, there you go. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it, sir. All right, Jeff is up next. Jeff, good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead. It's open phones.
Hey, good morning, gents. Good morning, Montana. It just baffles my mind, all the straw men they get thrown up here, no kings. Well, how do we know he's not going to be a king? No dinosaurs. I want to have a no dinosaurs movement. How do we know dinosaurs?
How about a no dinosaurs rally? I'd like that.
Yeah, no caveman rally, because you never know. We have no idea what those Neanderthals will be like. The thing is, the funding for those rallies is demonstrated. It's by the Soros-type organizations. There's a whole list, laundry list of the people who actually fund them. But here's the thing. The protest is against a fascinating kind of a dictatorship. They can organize a massive, highly publicized public rally to yell at the king, and yet the king's police forces actually block off the traffic so they can do that. That seems to be an odd kind of a dictator to me. But where were they 6 years ago when the dictator of the time, Joe Biden, wanted vaccine passports to enter grocery stores? We had FEMA camps. We had misgendering laws. We had social media censorship. People were kicked off social media. There was tearing of political violence at mostly peaceful rallies with fires in the background. Forced face masking. Face masks are okay for us, but not okay for ICE agents. There's just this real inconsistency that I just don't believe is, let them argue in true faith. And I'll just end with back on 2013, they talk about no kings, but in 2013, October 8th, President Obama said, "It's good to be the king."
I remember that.
Obama never said, it's good to be the king. Obama did. So are they protesting Trump or are they protesting Obama? Oh, it's just strictly an orange man bad. We're going to be against whatever he has.
Or we just have short memories.
Whatever he does.
Yeah.
Even though he follows the law, if a court says don't do something, he stops. He fights against it, but he stops. But he's the one we have to worry about. And I'll just end by saying I am so glad and so proud of Myrdad the way he pushed back yesterday and made an insane comment about how Israel is the one who's causing the problems. And one of my favorite sayings is that a person with an experience is never at the mercy of a person with an opinion. And Myrdad has experienced firsthand through his family and friends the tyranny of what's going on in the Middle East, particularly in Iran. And none of us have the right to, we have the right, but none of us should presume to try to argue against Myrdad's experience. I just really respect that, man.
All right. Thanks for the call.
John, a lot, too.
You bet. And Bob's here in the studio. Hey, Bob, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning to you.
All right. Let's try to get another call on. This is Rick. Rick, good morning.
Yeah, I think our King's rallies are more of a Trump derangement rally, but people don't realize there's 38 kings in the world. Six of those kings are NATO allies. Good morning. I want to know if they were protesting our NATO allies, because we don't have a king. We have a president. I'm almost 70. I've never seen this country in such hysteria over something that really isn't there. Does Trump push the limits of the law? Yeah, he does. But your last caller said whenever he is told to stop through the court system, he stops. Biden didn't on the college funding. There's other examples where other presidents did the same thing as Trump. But I just wonder if those 38 kings around the world, and they go from Sweden clear to Saudi Arabia and everywhere else in between. I was just wondering if the rallies were protesting our NATO allies, which have kings, and our country doesn't have a king. And that's about all my comment.
Thanks for the call. We have time to take one more. Let's take another call. This is Skip. Good morning, Skip. You're on Talkback. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Peter. I'll be very quick. I'll make an announcement this Saturday at the Ravalli County Fairgrounds. Starts at 4:30 is the Ravalli County Republican Central Committee's Lincoln Reagan Trump dinner. And there's like 20 speakers.
Wow.
That evening.
Wow.
For 3 to 5 minutes, yeah. And everybody for U.S. Representative, Dr. Rao and Aaron and Christy Jacobson and our our candidates for commissioner. It'll be on our primary ballot, and three different representative positions, 85 and 86, and there's so many of them, I can't believe it. And for 43 for Senate, and then just a myriad of people that are going to be speaking for all kinds of different positions. Meanwhile, the food is great too. I mean, I don't even wear my dentist because the roast beef melts in your mouth at this event every single year. So I just want to tell everybody it'll be an exciting evening. It's at the fairgrounds in Hamilton, and that's the Valley County Central Committee, Lincoln, Reagan, and Trump dinner. I just wanted to make sure everybody is aware of it. And it's going to be some tickets at the door, and it's online with the Central Committee's website.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you for
you, sir. Bye. You bet. Thank you for the call. Should we take this last call? Let's get Sherry on. Sherry, good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. I just want to comment on Harry's call because I was thinking how many territorial wars that President Trump brokered, and there was about 8 of them, and then the one between Pakistan and India was really serious, and he took care of that one. So I don't think it was fair to him to say damaging the world. That's why I called in.
Okay, so basically you see him as a peacemaker more than anything else.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Completely.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, man. We appreciate it. We're up against a break, and when we come back, Bob Seidenschwartz, well, the mayor is joining us here in the studio as well, and the Montana World Affairs Council will begin here in the next few minutes. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this.
At Lucky Diamond Casino.
Dennis Bragg with the updated weather. A mix of rain and snow in the forecast early Thursday, turning cloudy with rain through the afternoon. Highs will get up to about the mid-40s. Then on Thursday night, a mix of snow and rain again as well. Most of the accumulation is going to be above 5,000 or 6,000 feet, so those passes could be tricky driving. Then on Friday, a slight chance of rain and snow before noon. Mostly cloudy for Friday, although we could have some sun breaks. Sun continues into Easter weekend.
The more you listen to your kids, the closer you'll be. Find resources to help you support your kids and their emotional well-being at soundedouttogether.org. That's soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Pivotal.
And we are back. This is Talk Back, and our panel is right here in the studio and on the phone. I want to say a welcome to Dr. Mira Dadkia, University of Montana professor of history, and Michael Mayer, U of M professor emeritus here in the studio. How are you, sir?
Good morning. How about you?
And, of course, Bob Seidenschwartz.
Good morning, everybody.
All right. So lots going on at the University of Montana. Give us a recap of what happened yesterday.
Tell us what we've got coming up for today. And then, of course, we had some really interesting discussions yesterday. Great turnout. So take it away, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much once again, Bob, Peter, and Nick, for having us. This is the second day of our conference on the Middle East and Central Asia. And yesterday, as Bob mentioned, we had a amazing first day. The turnout was incredibly impressive. We started with a wonderful presentation by Colonel Chris Corey on Montana National Guard and what it does in various parts of the world. Very well attended, very good questions. Then we followed with a wonderful presentation by two individuals with Seidenschwartz last name, Bob and Connor Seidenschwartz.
Wow.
Who gave a wonderful presentation on Lebanon. Very good questions and discussions after the presentations. Very good turnout for that as well. And then, of course, we had a wonderful turnout, a huge turnout for the ambassador of Sri Lanka last night at 7 o'clock, who gave a wonderful sort of wrap-up of the concerns of his country, but also other countries of Indian Ocean and, you know, sort of in terms of security, in terms of international waterways, such as the Strait of Hormuz and the Red Sea, and why Sri Lanka is becoming a closer ally of the United States because of its own economic and security concerns. So today at 12:30, we will start with a wonderful panel of some of our most outstanding students and researchers that will be chaired by a much better person with the Kia last name. He is Professor Aldi Kia. And we will go to 2 o'clock, which promises to be an interesting and fascinating presentation by a delegation of outstanding Chinese professors who come from Shanghai International Studies University, SISU. I need to also, in this context, recognize the amazing work of one of our really hardworking professors, Zhao Zhen, who has been teaching Chinese language, culture, and literature at the University of Montana for many years, and is really the pillar behind our Chinese program at the U, at the University of Montana. And tonight, then, we have a panel, 2 outstanding scholars, Professor Michael Mayer and Professor Nathaniel Leftaw, with a guy who is going to bore everybody, Merdad Kia. And it's called Fateful Triangle, the United States, Israel, and Iran. So those of you who are interested in the unfolding conflict, we will try to address the historical origins and some of the relevant facts which are important to understand when we come to this very, very important event in front of us. So we all come from a very interesting speech last night by President Trump. A lot of people expected him to say the end of the war has arrived. I think he asked for a few more weeks, but he wanted to reassure the markets. I think a large part of the purpose for that speech was he's realizing that the energy prices are going up, oil prices are going up, and when energy and oil prices go up, they impact everything from agricultural goods to plane tickets, airfare tickets. So anyway, I'm not convinced if I agree with everything he said. I think I would disagree with the fact that there has been a regime change, for example, in Iran. I don't see it yet, but it was a way of kind of reassuring the American public that this is not going to be a forever war, and we are bringing it to a conclusion within a short period of time. So we will discuss that also tonight, I hope. All these events, by the way, as we have mentioned, Peter, are open and free to public, and everybody should feel welcome to come and join us.
All right. Sounds good. Michael, go ahead.
It's taking place at the University Center on the third floor theater.
Right.
Yes, bravo. Thank you.
And there's plenty of room in there. So just come in and pile in and enjoy the discussion, the dialogue. It's going to be great.
Yeah, and if not, Peter can share a seat.
Absolutely. All right, we're up against a break. We're going to come right back. We have Dave waiting on the phone with a question or a comment for our guests. And we're going to come right back. 721-1290 is our number. All of our other phone lines are open, of course, at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. We're coming back after this.
Being a family caregiver can be rewarding, but it can also be expensive. Search caregiver compensation programs at the AARP Foundation Paid for Care Hub, developed with support from United Healthcare. Visit paidforcare.aarpfoundation.org.
Hey, we're back. This is Talk Back. 721-1290 is our number. The Montana World Affairs Council in our second day of what's going on at the University of Montana campus right now. Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio along with Michael Mayer. On the phone is Dr. Merdad Kia, University of Montana history professor. And we have callers. So let's jump right in and get Dave. Dave, you're up first. Go ahead, please, sir.
Yes. Yesterday you got angry at a CNN reporter. You called him a propagandist. Well, It wasn't a CNN report. It was
Dave, are you talking? Who got angry at who?
Yeah, who got angry?
Oh, it was Murdaugh.
Oh, Murdaugh. You mean Mr. Kia? Dr. Kia?
Yeah, Kia Murdaugh.
Okay.
He got it. It was a PBS report. But anyway, about Iran. You know, we can bomb forever and never solve the problem in my mind. The true change of government, like I agree with you, the government has not really changed, is a revolution. And that is generally the way people change governments. It's worked in the past, and it would work in the future here. I believe that if we gave the general population, if you believe they are mostly in favor of true revolution, then if we gave them weapons through the CIA and allowed them, let them fight their own war rather than us fight it for them. That's the best way to change governments.
Dave, based on what a historic assumption of giving them weapons when you're talking about a deeply organized militaristic force that's in place in Iran and a population, we're just going to hand them weapons and then say, go at it, boys? I can't even imagine a worse slaughter.
Well, just stand back and see what happens.
Yeah, than what we've already experienced. So I'd love Mirdad's comments on that.
But I'd like to answer that, too.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
Go ahead.
There was a time when the world's greatest military in the history of the world fought a group of insurrectionists. They were poorly armed, poorly trained, and they fought them for 6 years. And the world's greatest military won virtually every battle except the last. And they did get some help. The insurrectionists did get some help from other countries in the form of some bullets and some military hardware. But the insurrectionists fought that army to the end, and they won. And that is the American Revolution. And it just took time.
So without help from the French, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And help, of just course, like we would help.
General de Gaulle,
the French had
France.
Troops on the ground.
Thanks,
and a navy.
General de Gaulle in France could have won
point.
By just giving arms to the French without us landing troops. And the anti-Nazi, anti-Hitler Germans, they would have won if we had just given them guns. And if we had not marched to Germany and got rid of that maniac genocidal, you know, leader called Hitler. Or let's say about the Italians. Why don't we just give arms to the Italians to get rid of Mussolini? Why did we land troops? I mean, amazing when you look at history. There has not been a single revolution. That guy Lenin, who went and overthrew the Tsars, he was put in a train and sent to St. Petersburg by the Germans, by the way. You know, this is incredible when we don't look at history as reality, that some people can just arm themselves and spontaneously go to the streets. And that would, in fact, justify more killing of innocent civilians. And you know something, Dave, it's very important. I'm not actually angry. I'm just looking at history, and I'm looking repeatedly at cases that we constantly talk about without even realizing that without direct military aid, nobody can win against fascistic totalitarian regimes. And this is one of the most incredible part of this discussion is, of course, the Iranian people tried violently and overthrew a regime in 79. You know what they learned in that lesson, in that revolution, was that when you arm yourself and you revolt, the worst characters in that society come to the top. In 1979, Khomeini came to the top because it was a violent revolution. They are trying to get this regime by civil disobedience, by unarmed strikes, general strikes at the place of work or at schools or at universities. We should actually praise them for being nonviolent and help them win. It shows maturity in politics rather than give them arms and create a more violent and destructive confrontation between the people and the government.
Well, Amir Dad, let me ask you this. What can, like, countries like the United States or Great Britain or whatever do to help the folks there in Iran in a way that you've suggested?
I think right now what the United States is doing in general with a great deal of help and support from Israel is actually destroying the infrastructure of repression. They're attacking arms depot. They're attacking even police stations. The headquarters of Revolutionary Guards, the most repressive institution in the government, as well as the Basij, the mobilization forces. These are the thugs and hooligans that came to the streets on January 8th and 9th and massacred people. And I think what has happened, in fact, which of course some would not even recognize or appreciate, is the fundamental fact that a lot of these forces, from the elite Revolutionary Guards to these thugs and hooligans, the Basij, they have actually escaped. They have defected. They are not showing up at work. So what does the regime do? The regime has now started since 2 days ago bringing basically mercenaries, armed mercenaries, especially from Iraq and Lebanon. These are Arab mercenaries who kill in return for $700-$800 a week. And they have come this time with Lebanese and Iraqi flag, and they are actually parading on the streets to intimidate the average Iranian. This is how bad the regime's situation is, that we have, in fact, reduced their power of repression. And I think in the end, we will need the Iranian people. The boots on the ground should be the Iranian people. So I agree with Dave that in essence it should be their revolution. But we are creating some form of parity on the ground between the people and the government. And I hope that in the next 2 or 3 weeks, we would be able to have the people come to the streets, and by the sheer quantity, and of course some help from airstrikes or air protection, they can get rid of this regime.
With that, we're up against a break. We're going to come right back. We have Skip, Rick, and Mark all waiting to visit with you gentlemen. And Montana World Affairs Council continues, and we'll be right back after this.
Yep.
Great conversation right now. Michael, I know you wanted to weigh in.
Yeah, just one more thing to add to sort of tie up what Meredith said. The analogy between the American Revolution and this situation is faulty for a thousand reasons, but not the least of which is that greatest army in the world that Dave was talking about had smoothbore muskets. The Revolutionary Guard are a lot better armed than that, mm-hmm. can do a lot more damage. Yeah. I mean, it's just not the same thing.
Right. Maybe we should send our history books to the Iranians so they could read about how to do this.
Yeah, Bob, I mean, I want to just build on what Mike just said. The government of Iran, the Islamic regime in Iran, the Revolutionary Guards, these thugs they send to the streets, the Basij again, they have the right to use the most sophisticated Russian, Chinese, and North Korean weapons. Wow. But the people of Iran do not have the right to ask for help from United States and Israel. Where is the problem with this reason? One side has the right to get every piece of sophisticated armament that they want, and the other side has to just go unarmed and fight and get killed. I think what we are doing to some degree is create some form of parity. It's not going to ever get there, but at least, as I said before, degrade or destroy their forces as much as we can.
Gentlemen, I'd like to bring up for both of your comments, I continue to hear 2 to 3 weeks or 1 week or whatever the time frames are. Cautionary tale for me is, to be putting that out there and not meeting that objective, then you have to backtrack.
Yeah.
And then you look
feckless.
You lose
credibility.
And credibility. And we already have a situation. Let's be, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. The American people are not exactly all, you know, flags and happy about this right now. If you look at the polling, there are some who will say, well, that's not the case with some groups. But this idea that in 2 to 3 weeks you're going to take a military that has been preparing itself for this, as much as it's been degraded, no question, we still have countries that are right across the Persian Gulf that are getting their infrastructure bombed. And with that happening, the downstream effect only gets worse and worse in terms of oil prices, gas, food prices, everything else. So this is a cascading effect here. Your thoughts, Michael and Mehrdad?
Well, I think it is always, especially with respect...
Go get closer to the mic.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. With respect to any military action, it's always foolish to put a timeline on it because, as the cliche goes, no battle plan ever survives the first contact with the enemy. And things go wrong, unexpected things pop up, and you can't time these things exactly. I mean, what happened in Venezuela was not the norm in military history. It was very much the exception. But, I think that's right. If you put a timeline on it and then people say, well, you didn't meet the timeline, you're not succeeding. So I think that strategically it's not a good idea. I think it was intended to be reassuring. But, in fact, it can have exactly the opposite effect.
We have about 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think to put timelines is not a very good idea. I also have to say this, Bob. The question for those who oppose this, and I think a large part of this opposition has been basically, encouraged by a number of media outlets, newspapers, TV outlets and so on and so forth, who basically dislike and oppose anything Trump does. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is, good or bad. They will oppose it regardless, and they have been at it since the beginning. But my question to those who oppose it is, what's the option? Pull out, go back, and not, get rid of this regime. Okay, that's great. You need peace. And 3 months later, you're going to have Hezbollah back in Lebanon, Hamas back in Gaza, the Houthis disrupting the sea routes in, especially in the Red Sea and the Indian Ocean. What is the option? When you have a government which is refusing even to negotiate under these circumstances for kind of ceasefire, what is your option? What is the best option? Is not to fight them. All right, we allow them to survive. What would be the result? 6 months later, we have to go back again and deal with them, rebuilding their nuclear capability. I mean, those who are for peace are actually suggesting something which will bring more wars in the future, which is the irony of this situation for me.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have a whole bunch of callers.
Well, we do now.
And do we have time to take one before we take our break? No, we don't. Okay, so but when we come back, we will go direct to callers. Skip, Rick, Mark, Jeff, and Helena are all waiting very patiently. We appreciate it. We're coming up against our top of the hour break here, but we have time for like one quick comment from you gentlemen. Go ahead, Bob.
I agree with Mehrdad. I have always said, do not listen to those who are opposed to something. Look at those who are in favor. And when I'm starting to see cracks within the Republican Party, Senate, Congress, I just at least want to ask myself, what is it that they're concerned about? What is it that they're saying and seeing behind the scenes, which I think is just worthy of us in an open society to
they
be able to at least
the
consider
November election,
that
Bob.
Viewpoint.
That's what it is.
Now, go ahead, Beard. I'm sorry.
Mike?
Yeah. No, Mehrdad, go ahead.
Yeah.
No, I think they're all worried about this thing not ending with good results and energy prices going up. Yeah. The election season is coming very soon. And they're worried about losing, both houses, Congress and the Senate.
And we are right up against our top of the hour break. When we come back, we'll get all those callers on. We appreciate your patience. We'll be back right after the top of the hour news.
Fact. This is TalkBack, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309.
This is News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. KGVO. Missoula's news and weather station.
Hey, welcome back to Talk Back. Talk Back this morning brought to you by our great sponsors, Y West Storage. Give them a call at 510-0590 to reserve your unit today. Quality Seamless Gutters, expert gutter installation and repair. Their number is 728-4002. Bruckner's Truck and Equipment, heavy-duty truck sales, parts, and service. Call Bruckner's, 541-9097. Busy Bees Cleaning Service, commercial cleaning you can trust. For a free estimate, 550-3219. Pivots Plus, Montana's leader in irrigation parts, service, and sales. Call 683-4418 for Pivots Plus. Gomer's Diesel, diesel repair parts and service in Missoula. Their number is 728-7620. Harrington Surgical Supply, providing medical and surgical supplies to healthcare professionals all across western Montana. 721-8468.
The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
We are slam-jammed with phone calls. People have been waiting since last hour, so let's jump right back in with our guests. And Skip is on the line first. Skip, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
And thank you, Peter. And it was so wonderful hearing you yesterday, Dr. Mirdad, and then today again. I think the news broadcasters all over the country that are on the big alphabet station to listen to this program so that they will actually learn what's going on. And so I thought I'd better just clear something up. I didn't hear everything exactly yesterday from across the room. Did you say that you think it's relatively impossible at this point to have a two-state solution in the Israeli situation? And then, and secondly, when this war right now, I'll call it that, is coming to an end, is it still possible that the son of the Star of Iran become an interim leader in that country in a new Iran? I just wanted to clear that up because I just heard pieces yesterday and I thought those were two important questions for an end game. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah. So, as you know, thank you very much, Skip, for your very kind remarks. You know, the second question is an easier one to answer. We don't know, really. Reza Pahlavi, the son of the dead Shah, you know, is acting as a symbol for a coalition of opposition forces. How much he has a chance, I will be very blunt with you, I have no idea. Is it a sort of a monarchist resurgence? No. I think that more or less the opposition has agreed to is that we need a transition to a ballot box where Iranians can finally go and decide what kind of system, what kind of political system, what kind of government they want, whether it's a constitutional republic or a constitutional monarchy. That's up to the people to choose. And up to that point, Reza Pahlavi is a credible option to take us to lead the movement in that direction. I don't think the man is applying for a job. I don't think he wants to either become the Shah like his father or a president or the first president of Iran under a new system. I think he wants to play a role in the transition. What will happen once the Iranian go to the ballot box is completely unpredictable. But I hope that they have that opportunity, and I hope that we will come to that moment. It will be a historical moment in the Middle East, that besides the people of Israel, we will have at least one functioning democracy other than Israel, in which people have a say. As far as the two-state solution, yes, that is correct. I think the two-state solution has more or less died. And we do not have the time to go into it, but I think the fatal blow was October 2023. You know, it's impossible to conceive the possibility of any Israeli government, to the right, to the center, or to the left, negotiating with Hamas in any shape or form. Palestinian Authority has no real muscle to negotiate with because it cannot carry anything. So for that reason, a two-state solution, I think, is more or less deceased. It's dead. it's no longer an option.
Well, tell you what, let's go ahead and take our break now because there's so many folks waiting on the line. Let's get that out of the way, and we'll get as many calls in as we can, and we'll be right back after this quick timeout.
God bless the U.S. Dennis Bragg with the updated weather, a mix of rain and snow in the forecast early Thursday, turning cloudy with rain through the afternoon. Highs will get up to about the mid-40s. Then on Thursday night, a mix of snow and rain again as well. Most of the accumulation is going to be above 5 or 6,000 feet, so those passes could be tricky driving. Then on Friday, a slight chance of rain and snow before noon. Mostly cloudy for Friday, although we could have some sun breaks. Sun continues into Easter weekend.
Hey, we are back on TalkBack. Let's go right back to the phones. A lot of folks waiting in line. We appreciate your patience. Rick, good morning. What's your comment? Go ahead, please.
I have two comments. First comment is the comparison of the American Revolution to what's going on right now in Iran. The one thing nobody ever mentions is that it's radical Islam that is pushing the regime right now. They're smart, they're cunning, but they don't think logically the way the West does. And we have to remove all of the regime. It's just as simple. And people can say I'm Islamic phobia, but it is what it is. It's proven out. It is what it is with radical Islam. Second is the Straits of Hormuz. A few weeks ago, you had a guest on about oil, and I called in. I made the comment that California, the breadbasket of the United States, gets most of its oil through the tanker system. I don't believe that Newsom has a navy to go in and do what Trump says, just take it. I don't believe our NATO allies have the will or the backbone to go in and do it, take it without the backing of the United States. I think that's been proven time and time again that NATO is feckless without the backing of the United States. And I would those two comments, I would like the guest to address them.
Thanks for the call. Gentlemen, please, go ahead. Mirdad.
Yeah, I with the first comment, I completely agree with. That's why I said that I didn't take the comment from President Trump that we have had a regime change really seriously. The regime is still sustaining itself. As long as the Revolutionary Guards and mobilization forces, their thugs on the streets are armed, nothing has changed. And the fact is we have degraded it, but we have not completely finished the job. We need to finish this job. And that's what, by the way, those of you who really want to see what the people of Iran want, the people of Iran overwhelmingly want this regime gone yesterday. They are actually in favor, in support of each and every operation that degrades this regime and weakens it and delegitimizes it. And I have to tell Rick, do not worry about this, these adjectives and these labels, Islamophobia. These adjectives and so on and so forth are created in order to make people feel defensive. And this regime, in the name of Islam, in the name of a political ideology called Islamism, is the worst enemy of Islam itself. If anybody has delegitimized the teachings of Islam, it's this regime. And in fact, you know, the enemies of this religion are the people who have turned this religion into a political ideology of hatred, in the political ideology of anti-Semitism, in a political ideology of anti-Americanism. These are hateful people with a hateful ideology, and we should not be embarrassed to say it.
All right, let's get another call in. This is Mark. Mark, good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for being here. Dr. Kia, I talked with you a few weeks ago, and we talked about the Islamic revolution in Iran in the 70s and the fact that the Iran people kind of got themselves into this and they were going to have to get themselves out. And you asked for some help for them to do that. And I want to be positive about this because I want to see the Iranian people have a free and fair election to choose their own government. But if you look at the history of the world, not going back too far, we go to Vietnam, who a ragtag group of people threw out the French, and then they basically defeated the Americans. Then you look at Afghanistan, where we gave that population every possible chance to come out and bring in a progressive government on their that they elected. And we essentially got thrown out by along with the Russians. I think the Iranian people have to take their responsibility for this. I'm all for giving them the help. You know, I don't know how far this bombing campaign can go, but eventually they're going to have to take the reins and defeat this Islamic.
All right, let's let our guests comment on that. Thanks for the call. Gentlemen, please, go ahead.
I think, if I may just respond to that, first and foremost, I completely agree. The ultimate force which will change this government, and it has to, is not United States or Israel. It should be the people of Iran. I completely agree with that. And if we actually think that airstrikes will change a regime from the air, it would never happen. I think we need the people to be on the streets, that, to assume responsibility and to get rid of this regime. Incidentally, they tried to do that. We now estimate that about 8.5 million people were on the streets on January 8th and 9th. They came, and I have to tell you, the regime had panicked, and a lot of its forces had fled, but they had enough goons and thugs on the street that they, in fact, unleashed a massacre. And as the president said last night, they killed nearly 45,000 to 50,000 human beings in less than 48 hours. So it is not for the lack of trying that we have this situation. And incidentally, I think the comparison with both Vietnam and Afghanistan is not a good comparison, if I may say that. Afghanistan is a highly tribal society. It's highly fragmented within itself. I don't want to go into, the Pashtuns in the south, the Tajiks in the north, numerous other groups in Afghanistan. Afghanistan, unfortunately, does not have the size of the middle class, which will be able to show its muscle and change the government. Iran has one of the largest middle classes in that part of the world. It is a highly educated, sophisticated population. 57% of university graduates are women. Almost 60 to 65% are below 30 years old. This is a very young, very anti-regime and highly educated population. They need extra help. I have to say this. They need extra help. But I think in the end, they have the capability to change the regime. I believe in that.
Hey, we're up against a break. We're going to come right back. Jeff, Helena, and Harry are waiting. Bob Seidenschwartz and Dr. Michael Mayer joining us here in the studio, along with Dr. Mirdad Kia on the phone. Another great, great episode of the World Affairs Council on the radio will continue right after this.
Montana State News Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg. The Forest Service's decision to move its headquarters back to the west, gathering some expressions of support for the plan to shut down the agency's headquarters in Washington, D.C. and move to Salt Lake as soon as next year. But a lot of questions remain over how that's going to affect Region 1, the oldest of the Forest Service regions and a legacy, especially in western Montana, for more than a century. The transition to a state model will mean the closure of the regional office at Fort Missoula. However, the agency says an operations center will stay in Missoula, along with research functions like the Fire Science Lab. But the change had been on the minds of Missoula leaders since the proposal was first floated last year. Missoula Mayor Andrea Davis told me previously the city is concerned about losing some high-paying jobs.
We value our Forest Service employees and the way that that organization and agency has contributed to the culture of Montana and in Missoula and in particular.
Mayor Davis says it's going to be critical for the Forest Service to maintain a presence in Missoula to help with the fire safety concerns in a warmer climate.
The Montana State Supreme Court won't take expedited action in that fight over property tax reform. Last month, Governor Gianforte had asked for the justices to make an expedited ruling in the fight with some conservative GOP lawmakers who claimed SB 542 violates the Montana Constitution. Gianforte had said the suit could derail plans for $95 million in rebates and skew property tax rates across the state. But the Daily Montana reporting all the justices ruled against that request, saying the governor hadn't proved proof of the urgency for stepping into the case, which is filed right now in Gallatin County. It's a rough one for travel this morning, especially across central, southwest, and southeast Montana as a vigorous storm system moved into the northern Rockies yesterday evening. But there's hope. The Weather Service saying that after this blows through, we should have a pretty nice Easter weekend with plenty of sun and temperatures getting back up into the 60s in some locations. This is the Montana State News Network.
Elena had another asthma attack. She's really sad to miss school again.
Asthma can be triggered by allergens from common pests.
I just can't shake this fever.
Mosquito bites can cause West Nile and Zika virus infections.
Sorry, boss. I'm going to be out of work for a while.
The CDC estimates that more than 300,000 Lyme disease cases spread by ticks occur in the U.S. each year. Don't let pests force you to take a sick day. Learn how to protect your family at pestworld.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association and the CDC.
I'm Chris Jakimick. I served in the United States Air Force, and I've deployed three times. So in 2017, I was serving as an Air Force First Sergeant. Our motto in that role is, my job is people, everyone is my business. But unfortunately, in that year, I would lose my own brother, Lance Corporal Adam Jakimick, to suicide. The majority of veteran suicides are from guns. I store my weapons securely, not only for myself, but for my family. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide. My service never stops.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Hey, we are back on Talk Back with us Thursday, April 2nd. A big note of thanks to our guests here in the studio, Bob Seidenschwartz and Michael Mayer, Dr. Mirdad Kia joining us on the phone and sharing their expertise with us right now. And Jeff has been waiting the longest, so Jeff, go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning again. Good morning, Dr. Kia. Good morning, Bob. Before I get to my question, I said earlier that people with an experience are never at the mercy of people with an opinion. And you have alluded in the past to the personal cost of this. And I don't want to get too much into it because I don't want to compromise anything on your behalf. But I suspect you have borne much more of a personal cost on this than most people realize. And that factors into this tremendously. My question, though, is around the how to get there. You kind of talked about it with a previous caller, but in the admittedly kind of brief research I've done, it looks like there's four main groups who can support an overthrow of the current regime. And one is the monarchist, Reza Pahlavi, the folks who support him. There's the People's Mujahideen Organization, MEK. Maryam Rajavi, I think, heads that. But that's not really accepted very much inside Iran from what I've read. Then you have the Secular Democrat Republic in Iran, which is opposition groups, I think, multiple groups who have formed a coalition recently. And then you have the minorities, the Kurds. I think it's the Baloch.
Baluch.
But those are, again, smaller organizations. And how does the U.S., I guess, is the question, how does the U.S. approach these multiple organizations and can the U.S. approach these multiple organizations and get them to unite against this regime? Or is that going to be something that has to rise spontaneously from within these groups and they have to figure it out for themselves? And how do they get there? What do they need? I know they need arms, but can they get arms internally? Do we need to provide them arms? Those are kind of the how-to questions that trouble me. Thanks.
All right, yeah. Thanks for the call,
Michael,
gentlemen.
Some of your background and insights?
Yeah, well, actually, for that question, I think Merida's much better equipped. But in general terms, the opposition groups have kind of coalesced, at least for the moment. Merida can add to this, I think, but behind Reza Pahlavi. And at least as a figurehead for the moment, as a transitional figure, I think some people regard him as kind of a Juan Carlos figure, and who, when the monarchy returned in Spain, as a means of transition to a government that at least wasn't Franco, and it turned out, in the first election, the socialist one. But the after the restoration of democracy in Spain, but I think that's probably the best way. I mean, the United States can convene these people and can argue that you guys need to cooperate, but the United States can't do it for them.
So a question I posed to both Mirdad and Michael, do you see when the dust settles, you still have a population of 90 million people, as you said, Mirdad, a significant, sophisticated middle class, massive amounts of resources, oil, gas, and various other types of assets. Will some type of Marshall Plan be required in terms of cooperation, U.S. possibly leading, but how do you see what will be needed? Often breaking things is much easier than having to rebuild things. And in the case of Iran, we're destroying infrastructure. That's going to take a lot of capital to have to come back in from various sources for rebuilding of that. So, Mirdad, Michael, your thoughts.
Well, I think for one thing, they're being pretty careful.
Thanks for the call, Jeff.
Yeah, about civilian infrastructure. Okay. They're going after military infrastructure, and the two aren't completely separate. But there's a big point. When you talk about the Marshall Plan, Europe was absolutely flat.
Right.
Europe's GDP was zero at the end of World War II. And
hard to make something out of rubble.
Right. Exactly. Okay. And I mean, that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but not that much.
Yeah. Well, Gaza?
Gaza's a closer example on a smaller scale. Iran has resources. The civilian infrastructure is not destroyed. And when you talk about the Marshall Plan, you think about Germany in 1945, mm-hmm. where the entire infrastructure was devastated. The water supply, electricity, sewage was pouring into rivers. There was no drinking water. And also the civilian population was devastated from the bombing, which is not the case in Iran. You realize that in 1945, one in three Germans who were born in 1923 were in some way or another badly crippled, badly injured. I mean, if you were born in 1923 in Germany, you had a 1 in 3 chance losing a limb, an eye, something. I mean, this just and England wasn't much better. They suffered the Blitz. France had been occupied and devastated, and then the war had gone back through it. So this is a very different thing. The smart weapons and all have just changed this entirely.
So the scale is very different, obviously.
And the approach is different. And Iran has wonderful resources that can be turned into a very, very productive economy.
Right. Mirdad?
That's the purpose of this. I think if you want to free Iran's economic potentials, Bob, you need to have the people and their government, an elected government, to actually rebuild the country based on a system that is based on rule of law rather than a mafia of Revolutionary Guards running the country. But going back to the excellent questions about the opposition, that was a very good list of the opposition. However, I would not call the supporters of Reza Pahlavi monarchists. I think one of his accomplishments is coalescing, actually, the Republicans, which means not the Republicans in our context, but with small r, those who believe in a more Republican form of government, a kind of a U.S. form of government where there is a president and a cabinet, so on and so forth. But he has brought both the non-monarchist and the monarchist forces. Let me give you an example before the war started. We had a gathering in Munich, which was attended by 250 to 300,000. By the way, our good senator from Senator Lindsey Graham was there. And in that, he was so impressed, he picked up the Iranian flag, the pre-revolution flag, and started waving it.
Wow.
And the cheers of USA, USA just overwhelmed everybody in the city of Munich. That's 250 to 300,000 only in one city. In Toronto, Canada, we had close to 500,000 people. In Los Angeles, we had close to 300,000 people. They were all in support of Reza Pahlavi, as Mike mentioned. It doesn't mean that they're all monarchies. They are basically for a democratic transition. Now, people always say, well, those are expats, you know, they're outside and so on and so forth. 8.5 million people went to the streets on January 8th and 9th. And the only name that we heard was Reza Pahlavi. But the name Reza Pahlavi doesn't mean they want the restoration of monarchy. They want some kind of democratic transition, and he is the symbol of that. Mujahideen, MEK as they are called, I do not trust them for a moment. They came into existence in 1960s and 70s by assassinating U.S. citizens in Iran, by actually having a very radical Maoist leftist slash Islamist ideology. I don't have time to go into that. And then, of course, you have more of a liberal, you know, coalition of intellectuals who have problems still with Reza Pahlavi because he's the son of the Shah. There is a lot of work being done in order to create a coalition that they are included. My suggestion to the last group, especially among the Kurds and the Baluch in southeastern Iran, is join the opposition. We always have this conversation. And a lot of them have. But there are Kurdish groups in western Iran which are basically Marxist in terms of their ideology. And they will never join Reza Pahlavi because of that, precisely.
We're going to come right back. 721-1290 is our number. Helena and Harry are both waiting very patiently. We appreciate that. When we return, right after this, the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio after this.
Just cremation.
My doctor said I could use something called a biosimilar. Then she told me what it is.
A biosimilar is a type of biologic medication. Just like brand name drugs have generic versions, original biologics can have biosimilars.
So I asked what the benefits are and if they work the same.
Biosimilars have the same safety, effectiveness, and quality as the original biologic. They also offer more medication options at potentially more competitive prices.
My doctor said I could learn more at fda.gov/biosimilars.
We are the keepers of the wild. For more than 80 years, we've been committed to conserving the natural landscapes that define our nation. Nothing is more important than maintaining wild spaces for adventurers to explore and wildlife to thrive. We are America's hunters and target shooters. Together with firearm, ammunition, and archery manufacturers, we've supported the conservation of more than 36 million acres of American wildlands. For more information, visit OutdoorStewards.org.
We are back on TalkBack, final half hour of this edition of the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio. On the phone with us, Dr. Mirdad Kia, here in the studio, Dr. Michael Mayer, U of M Professor Emeritus, and of course, Bob Seidenschwartz, also joining us from the Montana World Affairs Council. Folks have been waiting on the line. Let's get Helena on the line. Helena, good morning. Thanks for holding.
Yep. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to ask a question about the large geopolitical stage that all of this is taking place on. When the war first started, I heard in the media, I heard from acquaintances, criticism of Trump. Trump had done this, Trump had done that. And I think we're starting to emerge out of that and realize that this Iran war is taking place on a much larger geopolitical stage and involves a lot more countries than we might have initially thought. One of those behind-the-stage actors who have been sort of quiet but not quiet is China and to a lesser extent Russia. And I was wondering if your guests could talk about the involvement behind the scenes and otherwise of those two powers and what their take is on this war.
Good question.
And I noticed too.
Go ahead.
I noticed too. Yeah, there is a Chinese delegation today presenting on some of this, these topics in as part of the Central and Southwest Asia Conference at the university, too. So that brought to mind this question. Thank you.
Thank you for the call, gentlemen.
I think that it's an excellent question, but there is a very important geopolitical aspect. For one thing, China gets a lot of oil from Iran. And they have been allied. China has been willing to skirt international sanctions to buy Iranian oil, and they've provided other things, including weaponry to Iran, Russia even more so. The trade back and forth. I mean, the Iranian regime has provided drones and other things to the Russians. Now the Russians are returning some of that favor. Weakening Iran is a blow in one sense to both. And having a democratic Iran more aligned with the West would obviously be detrimental to their interests and beneficial to the interests of the United States. And even though they may not be that interested in at the moment, other Western powers as well. And so I think it's a very important point. And you notice how carefully both Russia and China have dealt with this. Neither one of them wants to get...
They're tiptoeing around it.
Yeah, exactly. And they don't want to exactly completely cut loose an ally, and yet they're not willing to risk anything for them either.
Yeah, I think one thing that we can say for sure is that since this conflict started, we haven't heard from Ukraine, which is exactly what the Russians would love to see. That is a diversion of attention from what they're doing in Ukraine to the Middle East. And, of course, instead of embarrassing them, we are the ones under pressure as a result of the conflict, which is exactly what Mr. Putin would have liked to see. I have said this, and I will say this with indications, that I think, in fact, Putin was also very encouraging of Iran, supporting Hamas, and igniting the conflict in October 2023 as well. All of these has a Russian finger or hand in it in some ways. Diversion of attention and basically changing the focus from the abysmal failures of the Russians in Eastern Europe to issues in the Middle East. I think China is a more astute player in this way. China has multi-billion-dollar contracts with the Arab countries of the Persian Gulf to the south of Iran. They have several major contracts with the Saudis. They have major contracts with United Arab Emirates. They have very important contracts with Qatar and Bahrain. So these are all infrastructural and very large contracts which actually increases the influence of the Chinese government in the region. As with Venezuela, I think what I am seeing is one of the reasons for United States to sort of challenge Iran is actually Iran's move toward an alliance with China. And I think the message from Washington is, this is our backdoor, these are our allies, this is our region, and you should not think about taking over or substituting us. And remember how it all happened. United States unilaterally and suddenly pulling out of Afghanistan, that was a signal that United States was not going to be involved in the United States was not going to be as involved in militarily in the Middle East, and Chinese immediately landed in Taliban-controlled Afghanistan, and they started actually acting as the mediator between Iran and Saudi Arabia for bringing down the tension between those two countries. And see, when there is a gap created by United States, China immediately fills that gap. And I think the message from the Trump administration is, no, that was just a temporary gap. We're not going to allow you to come in and fill the gap this time.
And with that, we're up against a break. And I know when we come back, Harry and Susan have been holding quite a while on the phone. We'll get their calls when we come back right after this quick timeout. The Montana World Affairs Council on the radio here on Talkback.
Taco Sano.
We're with Liam after his fourth military move, when being new is starting to get old. We're with all service members and their families. Are you with them? Learn more at USO.org today.
Blowing out your birthday candles should be easy, but if you have undiagnosed COPD, you may find yourself short of breath. Early diagnosis and treatment can add years to your life. If you have symptoms like wheezing or chronic cough, talk to your doctor and visit COPDFoundation.org today.
Okay, we are back on Talkback, and let's get right to the phones and say good morning to Harry. He's been waiting the longest. Harry, good morning, sir, and thank you for holding. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Unfortunately, a regime with the power that like are so entrenched, they're almost impossible to get out like that. I mean, especially unless they're willing to back down. Almost, they never. I mean, look at Syria. I mean, Finally, they beat him, but it took destroying half the nation. And unfortunately, I think that might happen in Iran. I mean, especially since Iran is still allied with Russia, and they may not be giving them much physical help right now. But I understand they're giving them satellite information stuff, helping targeting our people and stuff. So, and as soon as we pull out, if they get threatened by other people, I'm sure Russia will rush right in there and back them up to, help rearm them. And like you said, they willing to bring in troops from other countries. So it's, I'd like to say it's, unless leaders are willing to back down, they usually don't go easy. But also, you're talking about people against going over there. To me, the biggest reason is the lies. Why we went over there in the first place, this idea that they're an imminent threat. Well, Trump just said 8 months earlier, they obliterated their nuclear program. Now, 8 months later, they're within weeks getting a nuclear weapon. I mean, one of those is a lie. And which one? Obviously, so there's too much of hints of the old Iraq thing. Well, we don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud, and so this idea that they're some kind of imminent threat. Obviously, they don't like us, and they're bad actors, and but there's a lot of bad actors out there. I think of North Korea. They got nukes, and they're trying to get missiles to hit us. Where there's a whole bunch of stuff. So the idea that we're going to go over there and take them out just because they're some imminent threat. They've been fighting with us and all that. But the only time we've killed our people is when we've been over there in their backyard. So I don't think they're a threat to the United States, personally.
All right. Thanks for the call, gentlemen. Your thoughts.
First of all, let's be accurate. Iranian and Iranian proxies have killed Americans in Europe and in South America and elsewhere, and that's a simple fact. I think the emphasis on nuclear weapons is one thing. And again, you can have destroyed a great deal of their nuclear capacity. The knowledge remains, and the ability to rebuild obviously would be there, even with the taking out of some of their leading nuclear scientists. But it's not only the nuclear weapons, it's the missiles that obviously look at the destruction they've been able to cause, not only in Israel, but in the Middle Eastern countries, particularly in the Sunni Arab states. They have missiles that could reach Europe. These are all things that go into the equation. But I think that the idea about Russia is a fascinating one, the first point that Harry made, because during the Syrian civil war, the Russians backed their guy, Assad, much more than we backed, say, Mubarak. We threw him to the wolves. And I think that had a devastating effect on American credibility in the Middle East. If you're a tin pot dictator somewhere in the Middle East and you look around and you say, well, the Americans backed Mubarak. Well, that guy's in a cage. And the Russians backed Assad and he's still in power. And I think
go with the winner.
Yeah, exactly. Or you go with the guy who will back you. I think that Russia's sort of support for Iran is not surprising, but their caution is I think due to a couple of reasons. One is sort of geopolitical reality. The other is that they're very, very busy elsewhere.
Yeah.
All right, let's get the next caller on. This is Susan. Susan, thanks for holding so long. We appreciate it, ma'am. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, I want to send greetings from New York City to Dr. Kia from Hollister, who still remains one of his biggest fans, and he was one of his best professors. When I told him that I might be talking to you today, he got absolutely jubilant. So
there you go.
Greedy, he got really excited. He said, you tell the professor how much I learned about the Middle East because of him.
He
is now a world traveler and lives in New York City, and so has become very dear friends with many, many people who are from the Middle East. So anyway, and Hollister well. I want to just ask a question about NATO. I want your impression from both of your guests about, in my opinion, the turning of the backs of what used to be considered strong allies, when it is obvious from the long-range missile that was lobbed against a target that was 2,500 miles from Iran and hit its target, which could easily have hit Paris, London, Amsterdam, any one of the European capitals. And the Europeans sat there with their hands on their rear ends. And these are supposed NATO allies. And why is it that the United States remains in NATO if our NATO allies won't even let our pilots, who are risking their lives and their multi-million dollar equipment paid for by the American taxpayer, will not even allow us to land and take off on their soil? And I would like you to comment on that.
All right. Thanks for the calls. A very interesting interesting points there. Gentlemen, please.
Mike, please.
Yeah, well, a couple of points. And the point about NATO is a very important one. The Europeans obviously aren't impressed or interested in this war. They're not. They don't want to be involved. They're afraid of retaliation from Iran, both economically and militarily. And they would rather stay out. And a number of them don't think it's a wise move. There have been tensions in NATO from the beginning.
Right.
American interests aren't identical to those of Western Europeans. And even within Western Europe, there's a diversity of interests. And I think that's important to realize. It doesn't mean you can't have an alliance. It means that you don't agree on everything. And it's been tested. I mean, Mike Mansfield wanted to pull American forces out of Europe in the 1960s. Vietnam caused a rift in NATO. There are lots of other things. Reagan didn't always get along with European leaders about foreign policy. I mean, you can just go on and on and on. So it's not new. I think it's more acute now than it's been in recent years. But it's also true that the NATO countries love American leaders who defer to them. And they're less enamored of American leaders who pursue American interests aggressively.
Yeah, first of all, thank you very much for the kind remarks, Susan. It's reciprocal, basically. My warmest regards and wishes to a very good friend. One thing I can say is that wars and conflicts usually reveal the real nature of our so-called allies. You know, all these years I've been hearing from the British government, it's a special relationship. We are in a special relationship only when, of course, it serves their interest. I think a part of it is the growing Muslim population in Europe and the reliance of some of these political leaders, for example, Labour Party in England, Starmer, who's very close to the Muslim community, which is very anti-American and very much against any kind of American involvement in support of Israel or in the Persian Gulf region. So the British, especially the left, the Labour Party, is basically thinking about its own political interest. And if you were as unpopular as the Labour Party leader today, you wouldn't risk becoming more unpopular with your new base, which is basically very, very Islamic and very anti-American. The same, you may say, is true about Macron. He has relied on the North African sort of population, Algerian, Tunisian, Moroccans, who are very anti-American in general and very much anti, you know, sort of U.S. in terms of its support for Israel or its military involvement in the Persian Gulf. So the excuse that they always bring up is that what if, you know, the situation changes in Iran and, of course, you have a new government? We might have new refugees coming from Iran to Europe. I can assure you on that one. I think millions of Iranian expats in Europe and United States would return to Iran to contribute to rebuilding of Iran rather than leaving Iran for European countries. So I think that's a lame excuse.
All right.
But I have to tell you one thing. I think that the British and the French in particular are very worried about an Iran which is very close to the United States and Israel, which reminds them of the days before the 1979 revolution when Iran's principal friend in the world was United States and its principal regional ally was the State of Israel. They're very worried about that, that realignment. And I think part of the reason they actually supported Khomeini and the present regime is that it has kept United States and U.S. companies out of Iran, which allows French, British, German, Italian companies to invest in Iranian economy and make some money.
Hey, we're going to come right back after this one-minute timeout. I know Bob has a point to make. We'll be back right after this.
Don't be fooled.
Being a family caregiver can be rewarding, but it can also be expensive. Search caregiver compensation programs at the AARP Foundation Paid for Care Hub, developed with support from United Healthcare. Visit paidforcare.aarpfoundation.org.
No, only a few precious minutes left. Bob, you have a point one.
Yeah, I brought this up off air. We don't know, as Michael pointed out, if he had consultations and talked to our allies about what actions he was going to take in Iran. If he did not, and just unilaterally went into Iran, and then as things are unfolding, then is requesting, demanding participation. Given even all the considerations that Mirda had articulated, is that still the way you work and establish a cohesive unit to then make a change, as we agree, needed to be done?
I don't know about the French, Bob, but about the British, there were definitely consultations because the strategy of attacking Iran depends on Diego Garcia, and the British have a sort of a legal, basically, authority over the bases in Diego Garcia. And, of course, they, from the very beginning, they expressed their opposition to these operations. And it is remarkable if you actually listen to BBC very closely, and especially BBC in Persian. It is openly anti-American and actually propagating a very pro-regime propaganda, which is quite astonishing. This is our closest ally, and it's standing firmly on the opposite camp.
We have about a minute and a half left, gentlemen, to wrap up.
Mirdad, I have to ask you to talk about again the upcoming schedule that we have today for the event. So if you would, please, and again, reminding people, University Theater in the UC Center starting at 12:15.
Go ahead, Mirdad.
Bravo. So we have 12:30. We have a wonderful panel of our students, and then at 2 o'clock, our Chinese panel about China's relationship with the Middle East and what they think about the unfolding conflict. And then at 7 o'clock, Mike, Bob, myself, and our
Nat.
Good friend Nat Leftoff will be there to sort of interact and make some presentations. And we look forward to having everyone. Again, all the events are open and free. And it is, as Bob said, on the third floor of University Center building.
Mirdad, Michael, Bob, thank you so much for sharing your expertise. Appreciate it. It's been a great 2 hours. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, Mr. Nick, as we look forward to Friday, what's coming up, sir?
Right now we'll be on from 9 to 10 because obviously we have Catching the Big Ones from 8 to 9.
Catching the Big Ones.
Yeah, I'm never going to do that. You tried to get me to do that, but never going to happen.
I can dream.
Yeah. When they named me Nightcrawler Nick, that's when I said I'm never going to be doing that again. But
gotcha.
But we will be doing open phones from 9 9 to 10, and we may actually have a guest from 9:30 to 10. I'm working on something, but as of now, it's open phones, and we'll obviously get the crime report right at 9 from the county attorney's office and go from there.
All right, so there you go. I want to say thank you to the gentleman here for Bob and of course, Michael, for sharing your time. Your time is very precious, and we appreciate you coming all the way down to the radio station, sitting in these chairs, answering questions from our listeners. It's deeply appreciated. Guys.
Well, thank you very much.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you, guys.
You bet. And again, Mirdad, thank you. All right. And thanks for all of your calls, by the way. Our listeners play a great part in this program every single day, so we appreciate you as well. So I hope we will see you Monday morning, bright and early, tomorrow morning, Friday morning at 9. There you go, after Catching the Big